Good morning.
Good morning.
I think it's too nice to be inside here, so maybe we should just cancel this and go outside. Roshi and John don't have to know. it's been quite an interesting process to go through putting this together, this talk. I didn't think it would be too big of a deal or whatever, but obviously a lot of stuff comes up and memories and good and bad and all that. But I guess I'll just start rambling, and if somebody can't hear or something needs to be clarified, then feel free to speak up and let me know, and I'll take questions afterwards, I guess. So I guess just the basics. I was born in 1975 in Brockport, just half hour west of here. Grew up there, spent all my life there until college. But I have an older sister, about 2.5 years older than me. When I was about 10 or so, I think, is when my parents split up. And in a way, it wasn't a big deal. I see that it was obviously a better situation to have my parents split up. There was never any bad abuse or anything. It was just I think my father was just kind of emotionally not available for my mother or family, and later, realizing as I got older that that's the way he was brought up. His parents weren't really available, so he didn't really know how to be a father. So, I think I harbored a lot of resentment growing up, obviously, for that, and then realizing that later on that he was a human too. So, I think a lot of my negativity as a teenager would just kind of go towards him to blame. We never had a bad relationship, just or good necessarily, just really no relationship whatsoever. So I was basically raised by my mom. It seems like she was a stay-at-home mom, so a lot of my early memories are with her and my sister. And then when my parents did break up, when they divorced, what I realize now is I'm really grateful that neither one of them would badmouth each other. My mom would say good things about my dad and say how he was really helpful in providing child support and all that, and always helped with finances and all that. So I realized later that was very, very instrumental in kind of, keeping a healthy relationship. I guess where I grew up, it was kind of it was in between Spencerport and Brockport, kind of just this, not really rural, but it was like, I guess, considered a little hamlet. There was a little single intersection crossing, just a post office, no other major things. Post office in one corner, church on the other, and then a bunch of golf courses around and woods. So spent a lot of time playing outside in the woods and in the golf course, on the golf course, and kind of helped to start my early days as a young capitalist by making money on the golf course, sitting on the tee off, selling lemonade with my sister, and then later getting into selling golf balls. And so in the evenings, my friends and I would dive into the ponds and dig out golf balls out of the muck and just come out smelling like a swamp and just being filthy, and there'd be snapping turtles and muskrats and stuff in there, and I'm surprised I still have all my fingers and just didn't contract some sort of horrible disease from being in that water. I can't imagine. I think back of whatever chemicals the golf course was putting on the grass was leaching into there, and what other stuff was in there. But that helped me. I have a lot of disposable income as a kid. I think a lot of my friends thought that I was spoiled, but I would buy everything myself and like to buy bikes and whatever, stereos, cassettes. Buy the latest Van Halen or whatever it was. I guess later that capitalist streak in me moved on. Like fourth grade, I think I had a bag of candy or something that I bought down at the corner store, and I had I think some friend had some left. It was in the lunchroom or something. Friend had some change left over from lunch, and that was when you'd bring a dollar to lunch, and then you'd have like 25 cents of change for ice cream and snacks afterwards, whatever. And he offered to pay me for some of the sour balls or whatever they were, so a light bulb went off in my head, so I started bringing bigger bags of candy, and next thing I know, I have people gathering around with me after lunch, and I'm bringing, I have these pockets full of change going home, and I think eventually the principal or somebody didn't like that, so they put an end to that. I think when as I got in my teenage years and that angst and whatever kind of unsettledness that probably comes up in just about every teenager, that started coming through, and I really didn't want to spend much time at home or just kind of do my own thing, obviously, and I wasn't really big into school, into my classes and all that, and all that stuff. I would just be really kind of unsettled and have a hard time sitting through class, sitting still. I'd always rather be somewhere else doing something, because I'm still that way. It's I think that's really what draws me to the Zen practice, is that I'm kind of forced to sit still and deal with that rather than just kind of running about always doing something. But so I'd get into trouble with friends. We'd living near the golf course again, they'd have golf carts obviously, so late at night we'd sneak up and grab some golf carts and go joyriding and end up driving them into a creek or a pond or something stupid like that. And we got caught doing that when we were like, I don't know, 12 or something, and I just remember seeing the anger in this one woman's eyes, that she was always just like the nicest woman, that she was one of the family who owned the golf course, and when we got caught, and just her eyes were so big and angry at us, and just scared the hell out of me. So yeah, I think probably around 14 or so, when my friends and I started drinking beer, get a six-pack from friend's older brother or something like that, and yeah, that was just common amongst a lot of people that I was growing up around, and whatever was cool. And so got into doing that, although I guess to expand on that in a way, I think that was helpful as I did get into college, because I realized that when I got to school, all the kids who probably had more strict upbringings and didn't experiment with alcohol younger, they were the ones that really seemed to kind of overdo it and were partying really hard, whereas myself and some other people I knew who had similar upbringing kind of wasn't a big deal, and we didn't kind of overdo it and wasn't destructive in that way in college. But let's see what else. I guess where I grew up, being kind of out in the more rural landscape, it was obviously a very white conservative upbringing, and so I think there was just a lot of racism and prejudice, kind of just de facto, just for that, just because whatever, that's the way it was. I remember, when I was probably like 5 years old or so, sitting on the kitchen counter, my mom was making cookies or something like that, and I was probably just got done watching Sesame Street or something and practicing my rhyming, and I was just kind of rhyming random words, ones making up words, and eventually I came to a word which must have been or sounded like the N-word, and I just remember my mom just getting really mad and just saying, "Don't say that word. Don't that, you know, and I was just like, why? What's, you know, what was that? And she, I was just, it really struck me, and I think it still stands out to me today, that she kind of instilled that in me early on, just how words can really have that effect. It's kind of surprising to me because she wasn't a very experienced worldly person. She just was, she didn't go to college. She had a high school degree and grew up in Brockport, and I don't think she ever left. I don't think she ever traveled anywhere except for maybe go camping in the summertime, whatever, with family. But for her to have that kind of that insight or whatever, it was I think pretty powerful. And then another thing with my school, with Brockport, another thing that I'm grateful for is, even though it was so removed, they were part of the urban suburban program, which I think exposed me early on to different races. I had some good friends who came from the city, and that was, I look back and, you know, here when I'd hear somebody make a racist comment or something, after that, I would just, you know, realize how ignorant it was, how stupid, because it was like, no, that's not true, because that's not how my friend Doug is. He's black. He's not like that. And also, we had a big migrant farmer population at the school, and a lot of the kids would go to our school for part of the year, and I became friends with some of them. And so, again, that was I think a very beneficial part of my upbringing, to just kind of open my eyes to the greater world. So yeah, then I went to RIT, so I didn't go too far from home, but I wasn't living at home, so I went to school there, and still was partying and kind of started experimenting with other drugs, and just mainly marijuana and mushrooms and LSD, and kind of that opened my eyes to kind of new things as well. I think I didn't take it too far as a lot of people that I was witnessing, but at the same time, probably farther than I really needed to. Yeah. So, let's see. At that time also, I think he's still dealing with the confusion and angst. I found my outlet in trying to kind of thrill-seeking other ways as well as besides substances, besides drugs. So I was really into snowboarding and mountain biking, and those were good outlets, and I would always try to push it a little bit more and more and try to get a bigger rush, more adrenaline, and that's, I think really that was in a way a kind of form of it was excitement, but more of an escape to try to. I think the faster I pushed myself, then the less I could think about other things and just kind of really be in the moment. I think that was I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back, to be hurtling myself down a snowy mountain in the trees, and kind of you don't have room to think about anything else. You have to either stay standing or go into a tree. So as I came up to my final year at RIT, I just wanted to get out of there. RIT is on the quarter system, at least they used to be, and so I had two quarters left, but it was the fall, and I had some or whatever required classes, electives to take, and so I had to take a philosophy elective, and nothing fit my schedule except for philosophy of Buddhism. So I say, oh, I'll just take that, and I don't care what's whatever, some devotion to some little bald fat guy, I don't know what that's all about, whatever, I'll do that. Plus, to make it even worse, it was at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I think I tried my hardest. I think throughout my college career, I was able to get no classes earlier than 10 o'clock. So that was I was dreading that. But, to my surprise, the first day, the professor, Jamie Campbell, he just really struck me and just drew me in, and I just wanted to... I was on time or early for every class and sitting right up front, and just he was just a really good teacher and very open and willing to share a lot of his personal experiences. And I think the first day, I think he said what kind of got him looking for finding some meaning of some sort was when his young son was killed when he was run over by a school bus getting off the school bus. And I just remember being really struck by that he would share that. It just really made him very very human, whereas I think before that, as I've said to Donna before, I think I told Donna before that, professors just seemed like not people. They were just whatever. They're in their own little world. They didn't care. They didn't have feelings or whatever. They were just there to make my life miserable and give me work. He really had an impact on me. And so as part of that class, we came here for a little mini workshop one day. It's funny because I lived two streets down on Sibley Place at the time. I was living there for a year or so in an apartment. And my sister used to live at the apartments down the street at the end of Arnold Park here. So I'd come down the street quite a bit and never saw the Zen Center, never knew it was here, didn't know anything about it. So I remember walking down here for that field trip from my apartment and then walking in the door and just overwhelming sense of just belonging here and just knowing that's where I belonged. Just really intriguing. I remember in one of the classes, I think after we visited here, we then went back. The next class was talking about Zen, and we talked about all different forms of Buddhism, but I think he was showing photos of sitting in the Zendo and then mentioning the concept of Sesshin and saying, they'll just kind of turn off all the phones and, there's nothing going on and just kind of isolate themselves and this and that. And I just remember being so bewildered and just amazed. And I remember asking him, because the photos that I saw that he showed, I think were probably from the 70s, maybe Roshi, it was probably from here, Roshi Kaplow or something like that. And I just said, do they still do that? Like, people still do that? It just seems like such a ancient thing or something. Like, it's like, there's no way. Like, no way people do that. That's just crazy. But, I remember walking home then after that little workshop here, having this just really significant sense of, centeredness. I mean, more than I'd ever felt in quite a while. Quite a bit of calm. I think what really struck me, I started sitting afterwards, just in my apartment a little bit. I didn't come to the center or anything, but I think what really made me realize the power of it was back when I was memories of back when I was probably like 5 or 6 years old, being sexually abused by a neighborhood teenage boy or whatever, somebody that I looked up to as an older brother, and at that time it didn't seem like anything wrong, whatever. I trusted him. That's what it was. Whatever. And it wasn't until maybe getting older and seeing that. I remember watching like after school specials where they would deal with child abuse, sexual abuse, and stuff like that. And then I started thinking, oh, gee, I'm broken, or I'm done for, or something. So it was kind of this dirty little secret that I held for a long time, and I think every time some reminder of it would come up, even though as I said, it wasn't necessarily like this, you know, horrible experience. I mean, look back, yeah, it was bad, it was wrong, but I would just kind of try to totally shut that out, or I just think, oh, that's wrong, that's bad, I'm bad, I'm broken, just remember that we went to see Book of Mormon last month at the Auditorium Theater, and there was the one song where there was like, I forgot what the song was. It was like something like, turn it off, like a light switch. Like anytime some bad thought comes in, just turn it off and push it down, way down. Just get rid of it. Don't think about it. And that's kind of what I, how I equated it. But yeah, then after that little workshop here for that class, I remember sitting in my apartment, and just all of a sudden that issue came up in my mind, and I just sat with it, and it was just kind of, all of a sudden I just realized it was just a memory, and how much impact it had on my well-being. I think there was a lot of times I just harbored it, and harbored a lot of negativity, maybe blaming my parents, thinking that it was their fault for not protecting me, blah, blah, blah. My mom isn't, I never told my mom, she'd probably be heartbroken. I don't know, maybe she'd be alright, I don't know. But, she's still in touch with that family, and, I remember hearing just a couple of years ago that that guy who, he was out in Las Vegas or something like that, and he just definitely has issues. I don't know. But anyway, so dealing with that after that workshop really made me realize how kind of the power of Zazen and kind of the no thingness of those thoughts, and how it was just my own imagination and mind that was perpetuating them and causing that suffering, and just really had a real lightness after that, and just so I was really, really taken to it. Let's see. So then, as part of that class, we had to write some term paper, something dealing with Buddhism, and I never liked writing papers, and I'd always wait to the last minute and trying to find something to write about, and I don't know what other people were writing about. They were writing about maybe the exile of the Dalai Lama or something like that. So I was trying to find topics and looking up something. I wanted to do something with Zen. I came across a book that was titled LSD and Zen. I said, oh, wow, that's perfect. I can relate to that. Surprisingly, I couldn't find any other books or work on that back up. That was my only resource for my paper. So I went to the professor to propose it. We had to meet with the professor to propose our idea, have him okay it. And I just remember he was just kind of taken it back, like, no, that's, you know, you don't want to do that. Don't, you know, find something else. There's no room for drug use in Zen or in Buddhism. That's, you know, they really want to keep the mind clear. And I was determined, like, oh, no, I'm thinking, like, this is, I'm gonna prove that LSD can kind of shorten the path to enlightenment, and you don't need to work, you don't need to sit there and do all that work, you can just, I remember writing that paper and the night before it was due and trying to write it and trying to make my case, and then just, like, whatever, 1 o'clock in the morning, sitting there and, frustrated and finally just like giving up, and then my final paragraph or conclusion. Basically, I just started talking in the first person. Like, I realize I have no idea what I'm talking about, and I think I need to practice Zen to really do a proper job on this paper, because as I did read into it, I realized it was all direct experience, personal experience, and I had no idea what I was talking about. So that was like right at the end of the semester, and I remember getting that paper mailed. He was mailing them to us, and I was thinking, oh gee, I'm gonna get killed in that paper. I think that class was gonna prevent me from maybe graduating. Maybe I need that credit if I failed it, because I think the first exam I didn't take very seriously. I got like a 40 out of 100 on that, and I remember thinking, oh, this guy's really cool. He's not really going to test this very hard. I don't have to study very hard. I've been paying attention. I can wing it. I could always wing it and pull out a B, no problem. But I didn't know. I didn't know the Eightfold Noble Path or whatever all that mumbo jumbo was. So I got a 40, and then, oh no, now I'm going to fail. And but I ended up getting a B- on that paper. I think he just maybe he just took pity on me and realized that I kind of had a little realization from writing it, and helped me out with that. But that class kind of stirred things up for me. So I was slated to graduate the next that winter quarter, and I was trying to push it off as much as I could. I wasn't ready to go out into the so-called real world, and so I decided to take the semester off, the quarter off, and found a job as a ski lift operator out in Mammoth, California, at the ski resort, and just kind of. I think I also just had to get away from my friends that I was hanging out with at the time, and it was just. I just wanted to get away and kind of collect my thoughts, and obviously a lot of stuff had happened, a lot of stuff I was dealing with. So that was a great break to just go be in the mountains and sit in a little hut at the top of the chairlift all day and just look out of the mountains and just wait for somebody to fall off the chairlift and push the button to stop it. And pretty easy job. And then at the end of the day, I got a free pass, a snowboard, and there were a lot of Australians and New Zealanders there because it was their summer break, so they would come over. There was some program that they would come over. So So my partying didn't stop. We did a lot of drinking with the Australians. They like to drink a lot. So, it was good to just kind of get out of the rut that I was in. But then when that was over, I had to come back, finish up in the spring. So I came back and fell into the same group of friends. I was living with my mom. Just over in the Park Ave area, she's still over there, and fell into the same friends, so got back into partying, next time trying acid, had one of those so-called bad trips, and just really threw me for a loop. That really made me wake up and realize, all right, I gotta find a different way. I was still into mountain biking as well, and kind of that was my outlet. So I would go off my own and go mountain biking. So I remember going down to the Finger Lakes Trail there, down to Mount Morris, and cruising along. And going down into this little dry riverbed and flipping over my handlebars and coming down really hard face first, and just for whatever, however it happened, I don't know, just pure luck or whatever, I just happened to have my arms down properly as there was this big rock right between my arms, and my face hit it just hard enough to really hurt. I felt like I got punched in the face, but like if my hands were in front of me, I would have just probably smashed my skull open or smashed my face in. And I just remember sitting there for a while, like collecting my thoughts and realizing how lucky I was. I could have been just laying there in this bloody mess in the middle of the woods. And then again, it was just kind of a wake-up call. Like, all right, something's gotta happen here. And so I came to a real workshop here in August of '99. And yeah, I just realized it's where I belonged. I hadn't come around here or talked with anybody at the Zen Center since that first little workshop. So it was, whatever, 9 months or something like that since then. So then I came, did a workshop. I just remember some of the things that Roshi said, then Sensei. Things that he said during the workshop that really struck me, and just talking about how friends and family might not quite understand what you're doing, or, you know, might be critical, and then saying something to the fact, like, maybe you can help them understand what you're doing, why you're doing, or maybe you just need new friends. And he was saying that to the whole group, all the participants. And I just remember, it struck me, because I was just, with the same friends, thinking, oh, these are my friends, whatever, I'll probably be with them forever, blah, blah, blah. But, it was probably what really needed to happen, just totally sever that. So, I mean, I thought, oh, gee, they're going to, be upset or wonder where I am if I don't come around. Nope, I think they were just stoned, didn't really care who was around. So I'd run into them once in a while, and just obviously living the same lifestyle. I distinctly remember having a dream not too long after that workshop, coming around the center. I'd come every day, pretty much morning and evening sittings, or one or the other. And I just remember having a dream that I was hanging out with a lot of the people who were coming around here, who were on staff and whatever, people that I was interacting with. And it was just a good, normal, healthy dream. It wasn't anything really weird or anything. It was just hanging out at, hanging out at a park, or it was snowing or something outside, and just having a good time. I remember waking up and thinking, oh, that's, probably pretty significant that I had this kind of healthy dream about these people who are kind of on the same path. So that's really how I got here. And then I just remember really being drawn to being on staff and just really working on the practice more, as much as I could. And I was living with my mom. I remember her being really kind of curious and nervous and just kind of scrutinizing everything I was doing, thinking I'm getting caught up in a cult. And she probably saw this drastic change. Like, all of a sudden I'm getting up at 5 in the morning to come sitting with a bunch of people in brown robes in a dark room. Yeah, I could imagine she had to be pretty freaky to her to see that after being used to me sleeping in and whatever, just slothing around. Remember I was wearing a winter hat, knitted hat, just like springtime or whatever. And I just started wearing it. Maybe it was, it started to become fashionable or something like that. I don't know. So I was wearing this hat during the day, and she thought it had something to do with Zen Center. She's like, why are you wearing that hat? It's because I'm cold. And then she ended up coming. I said, why don't you come do a workshop? She ended up coming doing a workshop and realizing that it wasn't a crazy cult that people are trying to take me away. And she ended up doing a two-day sesshin too, which I was really, really surprised and grateful. And then that following spring in 2000, then I came on staff. I think that freaked out a lot of my other friends and family who saw that I just sold my bike, which everybody always equated me to, I was always attached to my bike, I was on my bike everywhere and doing that, and people saw me sell my bike, I sold my car, gave away a lot of stuff, I don't need it, don't want it, just wanted to kind of push the reset button and start fresh, and I think that kind of freaked out some of my family, but they dealt with it. That's the gist of it. I don't know if I left something. I'm sure I left out a lot. There's 38 years to try to wrap up into 40 minutes, but be happy to take any questions if there's anything that needs clarifying or if anybody, whatever.
Did your family have any kind of particular religious inclinations?
I was going to mention that. I grew up going to the First Baptist Church in Brockport. Mainly, I think my mom just felt obligated to take my sister and I there because of my grandparents. They were kind of pushing her to. I think she made us go until I was like 6 or 7 or something like that. But it wasn't real. I mean, we're not any devout. In any devout way. Thing I remember most is just Sunday school and having Juicy Juice and Chips Ahoy cookies and drawing in our Jesus coloring books. That's about all I remember. And then she would send me to a Bible camp in the summer for 2 weeks. It was just a daily thing. It was down the street, the little church, and that was mainly to get me out of her hair. So I don't think she was trying to get me to... be too religious. A couple friends of mine, their family went to some other big Baptist church in up in Greece, and this was I must have been like 14 or 15, and they would always come back, Joe and Jeremy, they would always come back and, come to school, oh yeah, we skipped out on church again. We went to putt-putt and played video games. And da, da, da. I was like, oh, cool, I want to go. So, of course, I go there. We sleep over at his house. And we get up and go with their family. The family's all excited that, oh, your friend's going to church with you. That's so great, Jeremy. And so we get there and we're hanging out. And they're like, oh, yeah, we just wait here in the parking lot until everybody goes in. And then we hide behind the car. And then we wait. And then we go and run up to putt-putt. Like, oh, cool, all right. Of course, the whatever youth pastor, whoever, is like right there. All right, guys, come on, let's go in. Let's go in about to start. So go in there and sitting back in the corner. And it was a big group of people. There's probably a good 60 kids in there, teenagers, all different ages. And I was bored. I was looking out the window and playing with the mini blinds and... all of a sudden, the pastor, youth pastor, just picked me out and pointed at me, and everybody's staring at me, and it's like, you're not paying attention. The devil's got a hold of you. And da-da-da. And I was like, all right, just thinking that I don't need that. Nope. So that was my last. I think that was my last experience at church. Until I had a girlfriend in college who was Catholic, and she wanted me to go to church with her once, or go to some evening mass, and I didn't know anything going on, and they had the little kneeling bars there under the pews, and I put my feet up there as a footrest and got scolded. So I wasn't a very good, not a very good practitioner of that. So, but yeah, that's about it. My dad's side, he grew up in Quebec, Canada. I think just north of Quebec City. And I don't think he forced any religion on me because he was sent away to Catholic boarding school for much of his upbringing. And I think that was probably a big part of his whatever his struggles growing up was, probably dealing with that abandonment of his family and whatever. But so yeah, it wasn't a very big, didn't play a big role in my upbringing.
Tom, I'm so impressed that your mother went to a 2-day session.
Yeah.
Did she share with you what her experience was
like? It was one session was here, and she was in the oak room. Sleep, that was where she slept, and they would bring out all the foam mattresses, and they would be in every corner of Arnold Park. So the only thing that she shared with me was that she was cold. And I was like, well, that sounds normal. That sounds... but no, I mean, she... you know, I think she's not really into, you know, personal exploration of any sort. It was, yeah, I think, you know, she wasn't drawn to it. She didn't have a bad experience. Yeah.
Tom, how has your relationship with your sister changed through all of your change and development, growth?
We've always been really close, and that never really changed. I mean, even as a really young, you know, when I was like 6 or 7, we would always kind of team up on my mom and pretend to fight to try to get my mom upset, and like, so we'd pretend to be like pulling each other's hair, ah! And she'd come down, can't you stop? And we'd stop and start laughing at her, ah, or we'd like put books in our, my sister would show me, put books in our pants, and then we'd try to get our mom to spank us or something like that. And, yeah, she was, my sister was always, she's always a good influence. Still to this day, she was always really good at, I think, just understanding. I think when I first started going to the Zen Center, I remember her saying something like, "What are you converting?" And I was like, "Converting from what?" Like, well, we're Baptist, aren't we? Like, I don't know. Like, what do you mean? Like, what was the last time you went to church? Like, oh, I don't know, when I was 10. Yeah, she's like, oh, all right. And yeah, she's come here a couple times for Vestak, or we brought my niece and nephew here, and she's not very. Yeah, very open to it, very understanding.
Yeah, I just have to ask this. Just your relationship with the natural world, sounds like you spend a lot of time in golf course, in the woods. I guess I'm saying that because I had the same experience. I spent a lot of time in the woods on these military bases. We had a lot of woods. I'm just curious, how do you look back at that now? Did you see it as a refuge, or did you have good memories about it?
Affected
your, not Zen practice, but if it helped you bring to this path? Or
yeah, I think so. I mean, I have a lot of memories of being in the woods. I would go in with friends or just by myself. We had quite a few little pockets of trees and woods around us, and I could just go and just sit there and try to be as quiet as I could and just try to hear as many birds as I could that were chirping, or listen to the leaves rustling, or in the wintertime trying to be quiet enough to hear the snowflakes falling. And I think it's a lot of people look at kids today, kids these days, like, they're just sitting inside playing video games. Like, I couldn't sit still, and I wanted to be outside, and I would be finding bugs and lizards and frogs and doing whatever. And I think it played a huge role. It just it makes me realize I have to make more of an effort to try to do more hiking or just get out in the woods. You know, it's just, it gets so caught up, and it's refreshing just to go for half an hour a hike in the woods. Just really clears the mind. Came across the photos that you gave me from the early coming of age group, where we had Gideon and Sam, and we went up to the Adirondacks. This was about maybe 2002 or something like that. So we had the coming of age group with the teens, and Truman and I and a couple other people were mentors, and we went up hiking, and Sam Riedel and Gideon Goldfeder were in there. We split up as the guys and the boys and the girls, so the girls went off and did their own thing. And yeah, so I came across photos that Truman gave me several years ago, and I just came across them like last month, and just it's funny seeing Sam and Gideon when they were, what, 12 years old, 13 years old, and now, geez, they're just, yeah. But yeah, that was I think, probably a good experience for them as well to get out with other people and canoeing and hiking.
Tom, I was impressed at your remembrances of things when you were young. You mentioned sexual abuse, and I know I felt guilt for many years about sexual things I had done. It's very difficult to cut through that kind of stuff, just to letting go.
Yeah.
I know you must find it helpful in practicing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, like I said, it was always something that I always was my deep, dark, dirty secret, even though it wasn't like this horrible thing. I mean, like, I could imagine it would probably be a lot more difficult for if it were a close family member or ongoing basis. I'm sure that would be much more difficult, but still, it was more of the, I think, societal influence of saying, okay, this is wrong, that's bad, and just kind of giving it kind of that much power or that much influence. And once I was able to kind of see through that in some little way, just it was helpful. And then, you know, first coming out publicly to a close friend about it, and then being able to talk about it, and now it's like, well, I wouldn't be helping anybody if I didn't talk about it. Mm. You know,
it's, what do you think about the person who did it?
I think I had a lot of anger towards him growing up, but then at that time, after sitting and dealing with that, I was like, I'm upset at some 14-year-old who doesn't exist anymore. You know, I remember as I got older, we lived next door for a long time, and I still looked up to him in many ways, and he was just always kind of the cool kid, whatever. He was when he first got his car and all that stuff, and but then I remember, you know, then he was really into bodybuilding and probably got into steroids and all this stuff, and then like he was, as I said, he was out in Las Vegas, and I think his parents moved out there because he got married, maybe they had a kid or something, and something happened where he blew up at his father and punched him in the face and just scared his parents, and I think they left like without telling them, like his mom and dad were afraid that he was going to do something wrong. He was like, you know, collecting weapons and all this stuff, and they were really concerned with him. So, I mean, clearly, he's got his own issues he's dealing with. So, but yeah, looking back and thinking, okay, I'm upset. I'm letting this 14-year-old that doesn't exist anymore to kind of have this much grip on my life. I realized that it was not doing anybody any good. I do remember having thoughts of like, what would I do if I confronted him today, or if I saw him, would I say something, what would I do?
Any other questions? Okay, so essentially, why don't you go ahead and start the floor for us?